given to me was how straight and how narrow. The phrase walking the straight and narrow is a common phrase in the English vernacular, and like a lot of phrases in our language, they originate in the Bible. And this one, of course, we know originates from Jesus Christ himself, the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm a teacher, so I can't help myself. I'm going to start by giving you a test. You can, if you're really brave, you can try to write the answers down, but it's only two questions, and you can just do it in your head and check yourself later, and you don't have to tell anybody if you got how many you got right. The two questions are this, to fill in the blanks. What did Jesus say on the Sermon on the Mount that was straight? And what did he say in the Sermon on the Mount that was narrow? What was it that he said was straight? And what was it that he said was narrow? And my students think I'm a mean teacher, so I like to ask tricky questions. So that might be kind of tricky. So the first thing you might have in your mind, mull it over a little bit and maybe we'll see. And so if you will, you can turn with me to the answer key. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 14, this is the passage that was given to me to discuss. Matthew 7, 13 through 14, I'm going to be reading out of the King James version of the answer key, because it happens to be the version that mentions these two words. Verse 13, "Enter ye in at the straight gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat." And then verse 14 is the right answer key here. "Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." You can check your brains now, and if you said that the gate was straight, and that the way was narrow, you can assign yourself half credit. We'll explain that here in a little bit. We'll notice maybe right away that this word wasn't actually in there. Right? It's spelled differently, right? And the theme of this meeting, as I heard, is pizza counts. Well, spelling counts on this particular test. It's a differently spelled word there. And if you, depending on the translation of the answer key you had, you might not have seen these words anyway. So it's important that when we're looking at the answer key to find the answers in life, that we look at the original Greek translation of the answer key. This is important. And if we look at these words here, and we look at the word straight, S-T-R-A-I-T, the gate is straight, that's what Jesus says. The Greek for that is stenos, and it's used three times in the New Testament, only three times. Once, obviously, in verse 13. Once, obviously, in verse 14. And then the third time is in Luke 13:24, which is just a parallel passage of Jesus' sermon here. All three times it means, and what this word means, S-T-R-A-I-T, what it still means today, is narrow. So if you said the gate was narrow, you were right also. And I just cut my talk in half, because now I only have one question. How narrow? Works out really well here. The word for narrow, what does that mean? Because then we might start thinking, well then, obviously, stenos must be the Greek word for this too. But it's not. When you look it up, the Greek word for narrow is a kind of a neat word. I like saying it. Phlebo. Phlebo. There's an L in there. Phlebo. And that's used 10 times in the New Testament. 10 times. And so it's always good when it's used a little bit more times, because you can get a little better idea of, you know, what is the majority of people translated as, and you can kind of maybe get a better idea of what the meaning of it is. And it's, I find it really interesting that 9 times out of 10 in the New Testament, 9 times out of 10, Philebo has basically the same meaning. And that meaning is difficult. The meaning is difficult. Sometimes it's translated as trouble. Sometimes it's translated as tribulation or affliction. Or the basic meaning of it is a pressing, like when you're pressing grapes to get the juice out of it. You're putting them under some pressure or some affliction. That's the basic meaning of this. And so, I keep changing my talk. The questions really then were, how narrow is the gate? And how difficult is the way? That's the answer key right there. I don't know how many of you got all the way around to that. But Jesus says the gate is narrow. And when you go through the gate, you enter the path and the way is difficult. I'm not sure why the King James Version translates certain things the way it does. I don't know if there was some literary analogy that we're making, because the other way was the wide way and the broad way, the wide gate and the broad way. And those two words for those are, they're different Greek words too, but they're Greek words that mean basically the same thing, wide and spacious. And I don't know if the King James thought that, well, if we're doing a comparison here, and we'll have two words that both mean narrow or something, so they made narrow be narrow in the one time. There's only one time where Philebo is translated as narrow. It's in this verse. That's it. Everywhere else, it's translated as being difficult or pressing or trouble. So Jesus describes entering the narrow gate and traveling on a difficult path. This word here, straight, there's another Greek word for that, and that basically means what it still means today. It means not crooked. S-T-R-A-I-T means narrow, the Straits of Gibraltar, the Narrows of Gibraltar. And S-T-R-A-G-H-T means not crooked. And that's not in this verse, but it does. There's some application there. I think we can apply it, and maybe we will hear a little bit later. So let's talk about the narrow. How narrow? Well, what is the gate? Jesus answers these questions for us, right? Very straightforwardly, he does. In John 10 and 9, Jesus says, I am the gate. It's very easy. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. So Jesus is the gate. How narrow is the gate? Or why is the gate considered to be narrow? Well, Jesus answers that for you too. He has all the answers. John 14 and 6, Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. It's very narrow-minded, isn't it? The world would think. Only through me. The world says something completely different than that. The world says there are many paths to God. We're all climbing up, you've heard that analogy, we're all climbing up the same mountain, trying to get to the peak. There's a lot of ways you can go up the mountain to get to the peak. This is what the world tells us. If the world is saying that, and if that is true, then Jesus is a liar. And we know that Jesus is not a liar. Jesus is not a liar. The gate is narrow because it's only through Jesus Christ that we can enter. Don't feel bad if someone says, well, you're a Christian, so you're very narrow-minded. That's true. We are. It is narrow. We follow Jesus Christ. We don't follow Joseph Smith, or we don't follow Muhammad. Those are not the way. Those are part of the broad way. And a lot of people are going, trying everything. There's only one little way right there. We got to enter into that gate, and it's very narrow. But it's even narrower than this. Jesus tells us again that our friends, our family, people that attend our congregations on Sunday mornings will claim that they've entered through the gate, but will still be rejected. Luke 13:23-27. Strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. When once the master of the house has risen up and shut the door, and you begin to stand outside and knock at the door, saying, Lord, Lord, open for us. And he will answer and say to you, I do not know you, where you come from. Then you will begin to say, we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught in our streets. But he will say, I tell you, I do not know you, where you are from. Depart from me, all you workers of iniquity. Matthew 7:21-23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did not we prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. Once we choose to enter the narrow gate, which can only be found in Jesus Christ, we will enter a difficult path. A difficult path. How difficult? And Jesus was definitely not your ordinary salesman. I don't think of Jesus as the classic salesman. You know, the last thing the salesman will tell you is how much this thing's going to cost. They'll tell you about the benefits and all these things, but they want to avoid the whole thing about how much it's going to cost. Jesus, I find over and over again, starts with, okay, but do you know what this is going to cost you? You're going to choose me. You're going to go through the narrow gate. Are you ready? Are you prepared for what you are choosing? Do you understand what you are choosing? Yes, he's offering the greatest gift that we could possibly imagine. But he's very upfront with us about what it will cost you if you would like that. Even when someone would come to Jesus and said, I'll follow you everywhere. I'll follow you everywhere. It's the first thing that Jesus said, well, good, you're going to love this? That's not what Jesus did. He said, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, and the Son of Man hath nowhere to lay his head. Can you endure that? When James and John asked Jesus to be with him in his kingdom, he says, you don't know what you're asking. He says, you will be in my kingdom and you will suffer, you will drink from the cup of suffering that I drink from. When Peter tells Jesus that he would always follow him, Jesus tells Peter how much he was going to have to suffer and that, in fact, you will be martyred for my name. When he sends his disciples out in the field, he tells them. He doesn't say, enjoy this trip. He says, and ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. But he that endureth to the end shall be saved. When Paul started walking in the way, was Paul going to have a carefree and happy life once he started following Jesus? When he went through the gate? What does Jesus say? Jesus tells him, I'm going to show him how much he will have to suffer for my name. In John 16:33, Jesus gives us a promise. And there's a good promise, but there's a kind of bitter pill to swallow there too. If we follow him, in him we'll have goodness, but in the world, because we're following him, we could have some tough times. He says, I have told you these things so that in me you will have peace. In this world you will have trouble. But we're not supposed to fear that. How come? Because Jesus has overcome the world. Jesus has overcome the world. That's interesting, I think. Sometimes I think when we're questioning why God is doing things and things, we question things in our life. I don't think we understand that we have chosen this path. And God is real open with us about what we're going to feel in this world. In this world, there is nothing but trouble. That's the promise to you. It's literally the promise that was given to you, that while you're in the world, there'll be trouble. You can make it through, because you can have peace and joy in Christ, and He will help you carry your burden. But in this world, there is trouble, and you should expect it. You should expect it, and try to think of how you're going to get through it with Jesus' help. In James 1, 2 through 4, Jesus tells us that we should find joy in the suffering that we have in this world. My brother, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. In Matthew 16, 24 through 26, we read, Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross. Take up your cross, and follow me. Does that sound inviting? For whosoever will save his life shall lose it. And whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Jesus says if you choose the path, it will be difficult. Let's be really clear. If you choose this path, it will be difficult. And it's difficult because you have to learn to deny yourselves. You have to deny yourselves things that this world might find pleasurable or that you might find tempting in this world. And you have to deny yourself for the present time. You have to deny yourself now, looking forward to a better reward in the future. And that's a really difficult thing to do, to deny yourself pleasures now to look forward to the future for pleasures in the end. Much better pleasures, but it's just hard to deny things right now. I think that's almost, if I had to boil it down, the difference between Christianity and the world is Christianity is about delayed gratification. And the world is about instant gratification. I want it now. I want to do whatever I want to do right now. And Christ says, deny yourselves. Carry your cross. And you will save your life. In the end, there's a great reward to be had. In the 1970s, Stanford University came up with a famous experiment. If you went to college and you did psychology, you would have classically studied this particular experiment. It's called the marshmallow test. I don't know how many of you have heard it, but it's a classic. It's probably in every psychology textbook there is. And the idea, basically, is that there's a whole bunch of kids and they're playing, and you put a little marshmallow there on the table and said, that marshmallow is yours, you can have it. But if you play for 15 minutes and don't eat that marshmallow, I'll give you two big marshmallows at the end. And what did little kids do? I mean, a lot of little kids, boom, don't even think about it. Instant gratification, I am eating that marshmallow. Instant gratification. And so there was a lot of tests that they did on all these children, and they even followed them into adulthood. And the experiment's fascinating and famous because of the outcomes, of the differences on the children that just chose to take it instantly, and the children that could distract themselves, keep looking at the marshmallow, but distracting themselves, proactively working to, let's play over here, and so that they could get the two marshmallows in the end. These children would grow up and had incredibly better life outcomes in their life. It was a really amazing study on the kids that early could learn to deny themselves pleasures with an expectation of a greater pleasure in the future had incredibly better life outcomes, the way, I guess, maybe the world judges life outcomes, but at job employments and family and all kinds of things, they had a much better life outcomes. And I think that's significant. I think that's important for us. This is a difficult thing that Jesus is asking us to do. It's difficult. There's a lot of people that are not here today. There's a lot of people that are out there playing baseball, soccer, golfing. Lots of things they're doing, and they're having a good time. Some of them are having a good time. Now, I'm not saying we're denying ourselves and we're not having a good time. I'm having a good time. I hope you're having a good time. But there's things that sometimes it'd be fun to do some things, and we deny ourselves because we want to follow God, and we know what that means, and Christ has asked us to do that. As we talked about this morning, the sacrifice. We deny ourselves so that we can look for this this better future. So we try to deny ourselves and not fall into the temptations of this world. To deny gratification in the short time, looking for an eternal gratification. There's a board game called Life, which is like absolutely nothing to do with life. And I can almost guarantee my wife thought it was harder to have our kids than just to roll a four. But there's another board game. I was thinking about this that I was working on my talk, and there's board games right here in this little closet here, and I was looking at them, and I saw the game of Life, and then I looked it down, and I found another game. I thought, you know what, that game is actually a lot more like Life. That game was called Chutes and Ladders. I don't know if any of you have ever played that. It's a completely non-strategic, mindless game also, but it's a lot more really like Life, and it's really a fascinating kind of a story behind that, because that is an ancient game. I mean, literally, an ancient game. It comes from India, originally. And it was called Snakes and Ladders when it came from India. And the premise of the game was you were working your way up trying to get to heaven. That's the premise of the game. And you could climb up ladders, which were called virtues. You had virtues in your life. You do good works. You do things like this. And you can climb up and try to go up towards heaven. And every once in a while, some of you might have vices, which were represented by snakes. So you do bad things. You have sin in your life, and you get snake bit. And you have to go all the way down, and it was India, so it was Hinduism, so you were reincarnated as a lower life form, so that kind of breaks the analogy down. But you had to start over. You had to start over because of the vices that you have. And when Milton Bradley brought that game to America, they did a focus group on children, and they found out that children were scared of the snakes. They didn't really like the snakes. Well, they should have been. You know, this is what America does. You know, let's get rid of our nationalism pride. This is what America does. It takes vices, and it made them into a fun slide. That's what it did. If you play the game today still, I mean, I don't know how many of you have played the game recently, but I mean, when you're sliding down, you know, it's because you did something bad, right? There's a little picture of you climbing up and stealing a cookie out of the cookie jar and breaking everything, and you slide down and then you see yourself crying there with cookies all over the place and a broken jar and your mom being mad at you. The slides represent doing bad things, and the ladders still represent doing good things in your life. But we just make things that we make sin fun. I mean, and sin is fun. Sin is fun. This is why people do it. But we glamorize that like it's in a game where we're gonna instead of making a scary snake that we should stay away from and try to deny ourselves and avoid that thing, we make it into an appealing thing, a slide. I was watching Gabby and Shay play this game, and Gabby was like over the top, and I thought, oh, he's going to win, you know, but if he spins a three, he's hitting that big slide, and he's going to go, like, you know, that big slide at the top goes all the way down, you know, to the, like, the third square or something, so, and, you know, sure enough, you know, he spins a three, and I thought, oh, no, and I watch him, one, two, Gabby's my marshmallow eater. I put my overtime parenting in for him. And this is what it does, though. This is what the devil does. It's just like, this isn't something to be avoided. It's something to engage in. You only live life once, right? YOLO, kids, right? YOLO. Is that still cool, a thing to say in school? I don't know. Every year I have the students try to tell me what's still cool. I just can't keep track of it all. But that was a big thing a couple years ago. YOLO, you know, you only live once. Do everything you can. Cram it all in. Well, I'd like to live forever. That's what I want. So I have to deny myself some of these things that might be fun. I need to be scared of trying that thing for the first time. Because I don't know where that's going to lead me. If I take that drink for the first time, I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know. Maybe I can fight it. Maybe I can't. We don't know. Be careful. Be scared of those things. Deny, just deny it. Go the other way. Deny yourself these things. It's difficult to not join in the sinful nature of this world. But we do have great examples in the Bible of people that were surrounded with this and chose to deny themselves these things. For that righteous man Lot, living among them day after day, was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds that he saw and heard. 2 Peter 2:7. Probably one of my favorite stories, favorite statements of faith, right here. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of God that you have set up." Daniel 3:16-18. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction, the path of trouble, chose to suffer the difficult way with who? With the people of God. He chose to suffer affliction with the people of God, then to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, a short time. He denied himself those things, and he chose to be and suffer affliction. He chose the difficult path, the difficult way, with the children of God. Hebrews 11:24-25. This word wasn't technically in the verse. Straight, meaning not crooked. But I think it is applicable. And I don't feel that it's necessarily a description of the path. But I do see in the passages and in the scriptures that it is a description of how we should be walking on the path. I think there's a distinction there. How do we walk on the path? And make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, and let it be rather be healed. Hebrews 12:13. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Ephesians 5:15-16. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Proverbs 4:25-27. Be strong and courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Important words for Joshua. And finally, train up a child in the way he should go. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22:16, very important verse. Walking straight requires training. You need to train your children to walk straight. Keep your eye on the prize. Move forward towards that destination. Helping your children find the narrow gate of Jesus Christ is incredibly important. Very important. But then, you don't say, "Now go." That's the time they need you the most. They're baptized. Job's done. They're in the gate. Well, now they're on the difficult path. They're on a difficult path. It's difficult. I'm old. Right? I noticed I'm the elder statesman in this meeting. I'm the oldest person. Very exciting.
Thank you.
Just got here just by a little bit. Yep. But you'll catch me. That'd be bad. I'd be dead if I guess you caught me. So. Okay. Well, that'll be a funny joke at my funeral. So you can use that. All right, good. Oh. Could be before I get off this podium. All right. But we need to train our children, and we need to help them on the path. Till you're dead. Till you're dead. Keep training them, helping them, giving them advice, being encouragement to your children to help them keep walking that difficult path. It's good that they're coming through the gate because now they're with you. They're with you on the path. You can walk together. We can all walk together on that path. It's hard to walk straight on a difficult path. The path is difficult, and it's hard to walk straight on a difficult path. There are obstacles in the way. There are perils in the way. It's easy to turn right or left around these things that we see in our path and get off the wrong way. One of my other children, I won't mention her name. We were at Eminence one year. She was probably about 6 or 7, and she really wanted to go on the canoe trip. So I got a canoe and I took her on the canoe trip. And it just so happened that on that Eminence, the canoe trip fell on the 4th of July. That's always those years when those happen. So I was like, oh no, what do we do? Because the 4th of July, you know, some bad things happen on the river. Let's put it that way. There's some bad things can happen on the river. And Ginger thought it'd be really cool to get Maddie one of those box disposable waterproof little cameras. You know, you just take all kinds of pictures. You know, and it'd be really exciting to see what you take pictures of. So we head out, and we're going down the river, and pretty soon we come around the bend, and there's kind of a place where the people can wade in and stuff like that. And there's kind of a party going on up there. I won't talk about everything, but there's some bad things happen up there. They weren't people from Eminent or from the camp out. People from the world that were out there and doing things. And of course, Maddie, you know, she's 6 or 7, you know, and you know Maddie, so of course she was like, what are they doing? And I'm like, Maddie, they're doing some things that aren't making God happy. You look straight forward. You keep looking straight forward. And, you know, it's the marshmallow thing. It's just really, you know, she's... Maddie, look straight forward. We're going straight forward. Stay on the river, the path, stay on it, and she tries, she's trying so hard, you know, it's just one of those things where, and it's good to do it like that, you know, it's like, no, don't look, you know, and pretty soon, she was in front of me, but I could tell, I know her brain, and it's a scary place, and I saw her kind of reach down and grab that camera. Go forward, Maddie. Go straight. So, and I never told Junior about that, so I was really happy when she was like, what are these pictures? It's like, I don't know who they are, and I didn't take the pictures. So, keep going forward. Keep going forward. It's a narrow gate, and we can get through it with Jesus Christ only. We get on that path, it's difficult, and you better be prepared for it, and you better be willing to help each other on it. Let's help each other on that path. In 1678, John Bunyan published a Christian allegory entitled The Pilgrim's Progress. I'd like to read a little bit from it. I don't know how many of you have read the book. If you haven't, I'm going to give you a little kind of background on the story up to the point that I kind of want to share with you. The story describes a man named Christian, and he reads a great book. And this book, although it's a great book, gives him knowledge of his sin. And it weighs him down with a great burden that's on his back. A great burden that he just is desperate to remove from himself. And along comes a man named Evangelist. And Evangelist talks to him about how he might possibly get rid of this great burden. And he sends him off in the direction of this really small gate. And Christian can't see this gate. But the Evangelist says, just go towards that light. And you'll come to the gate. Christian leaves his home, his wife, and his children in the hometown, his hometown of the city of destruction, to save himself. He sadly could not persuade his family to come with him. Two friends by the names of Obstinate and Pliable go after him and try to bring Christian back, but Christian refuses. Obstinate, of course, gets mad and returns home disgusted. Pliable says, "I might go along and see what this is about, you know, this place where we can get rid of our burdens." Pliable goes along with them for a while. Soon, though, of course, you know, they fall into the slough of despond, just drags them down. They eventually get out, but this was more than Pliable could handle in his life, and he left Christian too. He abandoned him and went back home. Christian's back on the path, trying to find the gate, and he runs into a man by the name of Mr. Worldly Wise Man. Mr. Worldly Wise Man tries to convince him that there's easier ways to get rid of that burden. Why don't you come off the path right over here, and let's go visit Mr. Legality and his son Civility over in the town of Morality. There's really good people over there, too. Why don't you go over there? It's an easier way to remove your burden. Luckily, the evangelist, Mr. Evangelist, shows up again and is upset with Mr. Worldly Wise Man that he had taken Christian off the path. But he gets Christian back onto the path and he gets him pointed back towards the gate. And so finally, Christian makes it to the gate and he knocks. And a man by the name of Goodwill happily answers. Very happily answers. And Christian asks Goodwill if someone with as large of a burden as he had, would actually be accepted through this gate. That's where I'd like to read a little bit from the Pilgrim's Progress. This is what Goodwill answers. "I make no objections against any, notwithstanding all that they have done before they came hither. They in no wise are cast out, and therefore, good Christian, come a little way with me, and I will teach thee about the way thou must go. Look before thee. Dost thou see this narrow way? That is the way thou must go. It was cast up by the patriarchs, prophets, Christ, and the apostles, and it is straight as a rule can make it. This is the way thou must go." "But," said Christian, "are there no turnings nor windings by which a stranger may lose his way?" "Yes, there are many ways other than down upon this path, and they are crooked and wide. But thus thou mayest distinguish the right from the wrong, the right only being straight and narrow." Then Christian asked him further, if he could not help him off with his burden that was upon his back. For as yet he had not got rid thereof, nor could he by any means get it off without help. And Goodwill said, "As to thy burden, be content to bear it until thou comest to the place of deliverance, for there it will fall from thy back of itself." And Christian began to gird up his loins and to address himself to his journey down that difficult path. Two things have not yet happened. The Lord has not come back yet. And you have not died yet. So we continue progressing down this difficult path together. But we have two great assurances also. Although it's a difficult path and we still have to carry our burdens with us, Jesus has promised that He'll help you. He'll help you carry your burden. He'll lift it and He'll walk with you. And we'll help each other also. And number two, that there's a great reward. If you're willing to wait for it, there's a great reward at the end of this path. If we just continue walking straight, don't get sidetracked. Keep walking straight towards that prize. And so we choose to enter that narrow gate of Jesus Christ. And we choose to walk as straight as we can. And we choose to walk on a difficult path. We choose that. Because that is the only way. That's what's been told to us. It's the only way. And hopefully we can all agree with the last stanza of Robert Frost's famous poem, which says, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.